Welcome to Makers Figuring It Out, a show where we strive to educate, motivate, and inspire with special guest makers, tips and tricks, do's and don'ts, and everything in between. I'm your host, Jacob, and joining me tonight, as always, kind of Steven. He's not here right at the moment, but he's going to be joining us on the fly sooner rather than later. So as soon as he's ready, he's going to be coming in with us. So if you hear an abrupt, loud noise, it's just him. Don't be afraid. He's just rolling in like normal. So anyways, thank you guys so much for coming on and listening for this episode. I have a really cool guest tonight, friend of the show. I've talked with this man many times, super intelligent, really great maker. He's done so many cool, awesome things, and I'm really happy that he can join us here tonight. We have the wonderful, talented Ben Neiman from Make for Life Workshop. I'm sorry, I can't talk tonight. Make for Life Workshop. Hey, Ben, how's it going?
Hey, man, it's going really well. Hello, everybody listening out there in radio land.
Exactly. How was that for an intro?
Yeah, exactly right. Good. Yeah, you gave me a lot of credit on the intelligence part. Now I got a high bar to get
over.
I've
hyped you up. Now you can't pull back.
Yeah, I can't come in like a dummy.
Mm-hmm. Got to commit.
Yeah, exactly right.
And if we start to stutter, just know we're both drinking tonight, so it's not our fault.
What are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Paradise Park. It's a New Orleans beer. So I enjoy supporting our local craft beers. So
yeah, I love that. I'm drinking, my wife got this for me for Christmas. She gave me a six pack that I'm still kind of nursing because I don't want to go through it too fast.
Nice.
But it's called Ginger Beard.
Nice.
Spiced stout.
Ooh, stouts are nice. Been liking stouts.
I swear to you, when you open the bottle, it smells like a gingerbread house.
Cool.
It's excellent. Like gingerbread cookies or something. It's awesome.
Nice. I love those, like, that really, they have all that spicing kind of really invoke like the winter months and like the holiday season. Those ones I really do enjoy. And it's funny that you mentioned that, but there's a local brewery here called Urban Brewery. Yeah, mm-hmm. Urban South Brewery. And they have a beer there called Strawberry Kool-Aid. And it's a sour, and I love sours. My girlfriend hates sours, but this is actually a sour that she does enjoy. Like the first time that she tried it, she's like, oh my God, I love this. It's a sour and I don't hate it. What's happening?
Yeah.
So like we bought like three packs of it that day, and then we went back the next day and like got like two more because it was really good. And it's really good. So
my thing is like, I like craft beer. I like anything that's like more flavorful than like Bud Light, Coors Light, you know, like if
so basically more flavorful than water is your
body. I'm not super picky is I guess what I'm saying. And in fact, I don't like it when a beer tries to do too much. Like if you're trying to do like too many flavors, it kind of, to me, that's kind of a turnoff. Right. But I don't want to call it hokey because I think that's a really negative kind of word, but like a lot of times they get really hokey. And so when I got this, I was really, really skeptical over it. Mm-hmm. But I could totally see myself drinking this like every winter. Cause you're exactly right. It's like, it's a spiced beer. It's perfect time of year for it. It's January. So it's still cold outside and everything. And though the beer is cold, that spice flavor is just, it warms your body. So
exactly.
I'm loving it.
I totally get what you mean about the flavors. Like it's like when you're like cooking a dish, and this happens in my industry all the time. Like you throw too many things in there, it kind of just muddles the flavor and like nothing really has a chance to shine. So you just less is more on this occasion and a lot of occasions. Sure. But now that we're off our, beer kick now,
yep.
Which we'll probably circle back around because like you're up in North Carolina and mm-hmm. Wake Forest, right? And that's near Raleigh, which I've been to Raleigh a few times because my girlfriend was a travel nurse over there at, I cannot remember the name. Wake Med.
Yeah,
she was over at
Wake Med. Shout out to the 919.
She was over at Wake Med, and they have a ton of breweries over there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, if you want, like, a state that truly embraces its craft beers, go to North Carolina.
We have, it's really funny, there's actually a brewery in Wake Forest, and they're, in this area, they're pretty popular. They're called White Street Brewery. Mm-hmm. If you're ever able to get one of their beers, definitely buy it. Not just because you're supporting a legit local business, but they're really delicious. And they don't, they don't do too much, kind of like what we've been talking about, where less is more. They do a blonde, a Kolsch, it's just
nice.
they pick and choose like what they have. A Scottish ale, it's one of my favorite beers on the planet.
Oh, I love Scottish ale.
You know, so White Street Brewery, if any of you guys are in the Raleigh area, even if it's just for a layover at RDU Airport,
yeah,
you know, so you can't pick yourself up a beer here and there, because they do a really, really good job. Really, really good job. And they don't try to overdo it, which is probably a metaphor for making, right? Like, let's try to keep this a making podcast for your sake.
I mean, yeah.
Because I'll talk about beer all night long if you want, and that's fine. But
I mean, I will too, but like, again, that's not that podcast. So like, yeah, circling back around. But yeah,
we can run this thing into the ground while Steve's not here.
But yeah, exactly. Let's just totally tank this thing. But actually, like, beer making, it's a form of making. It's still, under that all-encapsulating umbrella of making, like, you can be, you know, of craft beer, you know, of the different components that go into it, the different techniques, different styles of beer that you can go, the different adjuncts, yeah, different flavors that you can do, the hell, the different bottles that you can do. It's just,
right.
It really does, like, it's its own world that you could really get lost in. Hell, even homebrewing. I used to know a guy, he used to do like a seaweed beer and then like this kind of like Christmas beer and stuff, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And like, it really is interesting. And let's tie this back around again. I know it's been the longest 7 minutes ever of an intro, but to put a not too fine a point on it, like, just who the hell are you? Like, who is Ben Neiman? Why does he do what he does? Like, where does all this come from? Like, where does this start?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Man, where does it start? My grandfather was pretty much my dad. I grew up, you know, child of a single mother. Mm-hmm. My dad was gone pretty early in my life, and my grandfather really took over the role of like kind of developing the man part of me. Right. And then, you know, he would have me out in the shop when I was 6-7 years old. And he'd give me a block of wood and some nails and a hammer and say, here you go, you know, have fun. Mm. And I would just sit in the floor of his shop while he's working on something, you know, really nice and legit. And I'm just pounding away, you know, putting 18 nails into a piece of wood. And I'd hand it to him, like, really proud. And he was really supportive and really, you know, I don't know, he really backed all of us, like his grandkids, and there's a lot of us. He really backed us in every way that he could. One of the biggest cheerleaders that you could ever have in your life, which for a kid like me was what I needed. Fast forward to, you know, like high school, college, I just got away from it. You know, there's no way around it. I for me at least, like vocational tech in high school was not something that you really aspired to. Making wasn't right. as popular then as it is now. And so I don't know, like this is going to sound terrible. And if you're listening, hear me out. We were kind of raised thinking that Votec was for like the kids that couldn't make it in school, but it wasn't. Like I wish that I had a clearer head on my shoulders at the time, because those kids graduated high school and went off to college with a handful of skills that I didn't have, or that I wish I had been able to tune, you know, better. So I go into college and went totally liberal arts degree. Really didn't do anything and didn't have a shop or anything. Got married for a few years. And then my son was born. You know, my son's 10, he's going to be 11 this year. And something about having somebody to teach things to, because my wife's a fantastic graphic designer. She's a way better graphic designer than I will be anything in my life. Right.
Right.
So I didn't have to teach her anything. She's not interested in working with her hands. Her dad's a woodworker, so she kind of grew up around it. Just not interested in it. Right, but my son, I was like, I'm going to have him in the shop with me, handful of nails, piece of wood, and a hammer. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, man, that was kind of the catalyst for me to get back into a shop and to start buying tools. And what happened, and I think a lot of makers have this in common, is I would make a thing for myself, or I would make it as a gift, and then I just post a picture of it to my Facebook page, and somebody would say, hey, that's cool, I want to buy one. And I would say, why? You know, it's okay.
Yeah, he's like, okay, are you sure? You're sure.
Give me money for it. That's fine. And I didn't really have any aspirations of doing it as a business at the time. It was just a nice little hobby. Mm-hmm. And my wife's only rule was let the hobby pay for itself, right? So if I could turn some money and buy new tools and it wasn't eating into our personal budget, then she was fine to just let me do whatever I wanted to. And she kind of gave me a lot of freedom to spread out and stretch my legs, so to say, in that making, you know, world, I guess.
Right.
And then it just, the bug got me, and I just, it wasn't enough anymore to just make a thing to be working with my hands. I wanted to make better things, and I wanted to hone these skills. And then YouTube really kind of turned a corner as far as the content that was being published. And so all of a sudden, mm-hmm. the education that a lot of those kids in high school were able to get formally with an instructor and be able to ask the questions was now available for free on YouTube or, yeah. you know, with Google or whatever. And so I very much just taught myself how to do certain things, you know, and I don't know. And I just tried, I'm a competitive person. I don't come across it all the time, but like, if you bet me that your arms were longer than yours, I'd put a dollar on it that I could beat you just in an arm length contest, you know, and I don't care. It's just, I'm just a competitor. Keep metrics at my job now, my day job. And I'm constantly striving to like make my metrics better than the next guy and better than the next guy. Not because I want to beat everybody, but you know, I kind of have this saying that a rising tide raises all boats. And so for me, like there's a skill level relationship to that. Like as one skill grows, so do the others. And so I really just dug in to try to hone my skills. And I mean, what was a nostalgic memory turned into a hobby, turned into a little bit of extra beer money here and there and tool money. And then, you know, as of last year, it turned into a legitimate business. I mean, I've been doing it for some side income for probably 18 months now, maybe 2 years. And then last year I finally made the decision, like go ahead and formalize the business, register it. And there's a day coming, and I don't know when it's going to be, but there's a day coming when I'll never work for anybody else in my life ever again, you know, and that's going to be dictated a lot by, luck. Mm-hmm. And it'll be dictated a lot by, you know, what kind of, income the business can start bringing me. It's going to be dictated a lot by what my schedule allows for me to do. But there will be a day when I'll send in a letter of resignation, and then we'll work for myself as long as I can keep money coming in the house.
I hear that. And then first off, I want to say it's just incredible that you've been able to reach that far, and I aspire to be at like the level that you're at. I have nothing but respect for the amount of effort and ambition and drive that you put into getting your business and making it legitimate, and the amount that you've done. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So that's,
I'll tell you what, man, that's one thing, like my, you know, our, we got into, have you seen the musical Hamilton yet? Like we didn't see Hamilton and kind of like late in the game, but there's a song where it talks about like what his path to greatness was because he was just nonstop. And I'm not the nonstop guy, because we also just got Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch at Christmas time. And so I've been giving a lot more time to that than I probably should to make a business happen.
Well, but it's a great game. Like, so I hear. I haven't played it myself.
Oh, yet. It's a fantastic game. but like when my mind isn't occupied with family and work and things that are more important than the shop, my mind goes straight to the shop. And I'm constantly thinking about, you know, what could I do? And if I have the time and I have the energy at the end of a day, I'm in the shop. Like there have been times, Jacob, and I maybe even told you this before in the Zoom group, mm-hmm. sometimes I'll just walk out to the shop to smell it, and then I'll come back inside because I just don't have the energy at the end of a work day to build a thing, but I'm just, my mind always goes there.
Yeah, so I hear you.
I really, really love it. It's a passion for me. And that's how I know that it's going to happen at some point. You know, that drive that you're talking about is, I can't shake it, and I wouldn't want to if I could turn it off. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I believe me, I understand. And it's like where your mind, the last thing that you think about when you go to sleep, and like the first thing that you think about when you wake up.
Yeah.
You know, besides your wife, I would hope, but like, but yeah, no, totally. And it's interesting that you talked about metrics earlier. Is that I feel like for me personally, when you have like quantifiable goals, like when you, like even like, you know, that I do YouTube and all that, like for me, seeing like those numbers, like the amount of views and knowing that I can effectively, I can affect those, like, actually, like, quantifiably, like, with my actions, drives me more. Like, all right, I put out this video, I get this, something like X amount of subscribers from this, this amount of views, or I'm making a project, and if I take X amount of time, then put it to this for X amount of minutes, and so on and so forth, and I get this far along. Like, you can, like, I feel like being able to physically measure, like, what you're doing and, like, working towards is just helps so much with, like, trying to actually push towards a goal. When you leave things, like, kind of up in the air and kind of, I don't want to say, like, wishy-washy, but, like, not so solid, like, not such a really, like, quantifiable or, like, a really attainable goal.
Yeah.
That's kind of more, like, up in the air and flimsy, a really kind of more general kind of idea. Doesn't really help you a lot as far as, like, driving. Like, you might, like, might be, like, going in a general direction, but I feel like it's, if you make it specific and of something that you want to attain, it goes a long way of helping to drive you towards that point, because you know exactly the steps that you need to take to get there.
And, you know, and I'll admit to you, one of my faults, and it's not been a lifelong fault, I can promise you that, is that sometimes I feel like I'm too careful. Like, I do think that to be a business owner, to go on your own, you really have to be a risk taker. Like, you have to take your shot when it's open. And I don't know. I feel like as I've gotten older, you know, as my kids have gotten older and I'm trying to teach them, you know, how not to break their legs and their arms out of every tree and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, I'm trying to teach them calculated decisions. And that's the conflicted part of my brain, is that I really want, like, YouTube. It's in my brain is the barrier between me and doing YouTube. I really want to do YouTube. My goal for 2021 is to do 12 YouTube videos. I want to do one every month, or, you know, at least hit 12 by the end of the year, average one a month.
Okay, really, YouTube, because we haven't bugged you about that for a year.
Yeah, I know, right? But the problem is that I look at this stuff and I'm like, I don't want to release something that's bad. Like, I'm obsessed with this idea of, like, avoiding bad. Like, I not necessarily that I have to, like, hit, you know, super, like, I'll never be Ag Does It, right? Like, I'll never put out videos that are produced to his quality. Or,
he does great videos for sure. Or even, like, you know, Peter Brown, or, you know, who's another one, like David Picciuto, and all these other guys, or Laura Kampf for sure.
And that's the thing, is, like, I love watching those videos. I know how much time they put into it. And I'm so afraid to, like, really commit, really, really commit. And that's what I think what you have to do. And even with, like, owning the business, not just with the YouTube, is that you have to full commit to doing it. And I had a chance. Like, I've told a couple people this, like, at the very beginning of the coronavirus last year, I had to switch careers. I was one of the early workforce casualties. My job went away. And I voluntarily stepped away. It was I wasn't laid off. I wasn't fired or anything. I took a severance package. And what I should have done, and I almost did, I should have just dug my heels in and said, sink or swim, the business is going to happen.
Right.
I mean, I have a good, you know, decent resume to fall back on if I needed to go back into the working world. And then one of my best friends, a guy that I'm, you know, extremely close with, texted me and said, hey, come work for me. Let me just put food on your family's table for a couple months until you kind of figure things out. And I said, okay. And because I had the parachute, I pulled the cord.
Right.
Right. And I think if I hadn't had that, that calculated part of me probably would have been silenced enough for me to take that shot. And I don't think I regret it 100%, but there's part of me that does wish that I had not had the parachute or the safety net or whatever.
Right.
Cause I know myself well enough to know that, like, if my current job were just to go away tomorrow, I could probably pivot into it. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to look back and regret and watch my family all starve and say, like,
yeah, that's the thing
that I wanted to do.
And I think that's the thing about it too, is, like, yes, we have to have security. Let's be honest. Like, you got to have some sort of security in life, and it'd be nice if we can just, like, all just quit our jobs and become, like, YouTube stars and, like, start our own, like, however business and do podcasting for a living. But yeah. That doesn't work out necessarily for everybody. I'm not saying that it can't and that you don't have the possibility to do it. Everybody has the possibility to make it happen.
Yeah.
But not necessarily doesn't work out for everybody. But on the flip side, you won't actually know unless you actually take that risk.
Yeah.
And try and make it happen. Like I said, like some of the greatest businesses of all times have been made on top of risks, you know, a risk taken and reward received. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And as far as like your hesitation to get into YouTube and like not wanting to like put out bad content, I can totally understand that fear. And it's something that I struggled with, like when I first put out my videos. And I could tell you that no matter what, even like all those big names, Lord Conk, Bob, you know, Jimmy, whoever, everyone starts at suck. That's just end all be all. And everyone starts to suck. Have you seen my first video? It sucks.
Well, the problem is I'd probably make a vacation home there and just stay at suck.
Don't tell yourself that. But it's just like anything else. Like you were saying, you know, you start at your first video. It's probably by far nowhere near where you thought it was, but you recognize areas that you can improve, and just each video you just do a little bit better until you get to a point of where you actually want to be. And it's just like your business. Like you start at one area. It's like not exactly, it's good. You know, it's good enough to start, but it's not exactly where you want it to be. And so you adjust, you pivot, you make improvements, and then you have the next version. And it's a little bit better, but still not quite exactly how you want it. It's not in that state that you're really wanting it to be, that caliber. And so you make another adjustment. You make small improvements here and there to be able to get to the point that you want.
Well, it's coming, baby. It's coming. I'm going to start putting videos out this year. It's going to happen. If it doesn't, then I'll just delete everything, sell my shop, and
you can just blame me.
Pick up knitting or something.
Knitting, really? I mean, you could. I'm not knocking knitting, but just saying.
Oh, man.
It's funny. Actually, I'm subscribed to a knitting channel, too, so I can't really
just
say.
You just lost a good portion of your audience there, Jacob. You just ostracized.
I know, yeah. I'm just like unlike, unsubscribe everybody. But, yeah, so it's – Starting anything is hard, in my opinion. And like, as far as like,
and not to be so negative. Also, I don't want to stay on like the risk and all this kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. Dean Duplantis kind of put me in my place the other night. You know, he actually said it. He wasn't even talking to me, I don't think. But we had like a Maker's Cocktail Hour, you know, Zoom meeting, a bunch of people, and what he said was, he basically said, just invest in yourself. You know, like, buy the tool, buy the thing. And for anybody out there listening who's like on the fence about having a business, if you have something that you think you want to make, like, you don't have to jump into $10,000 worth of tools day one. Like, buy a lathe, buy a table saw, buy a miter saw, like make the things that you can. And that, and I love that idea, because even for a guy like me who just kind of has to shake off the, you know, the why not, so why I'm not going to do it thoughts and everything, like just go out in the shop, make a thing, get started. You know, what is it? Every journey starts with one step, you know, all exactly. Those kinds of things. And like, really what it is, it's just taking the next step and the next step and the next step and the mm-hmm. next step. And, you know, even if you fall back, it's just another step. And
exactly. And it's
I don't want this to sound like I'm just like, woe is me on, you know, on why I'm not doing all the things. Like, I'm driven to do it. I just, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, but there's also times we have to pick and choose when to start something. Sometimes it's just not a smart time to do it. And I feel like in life, like, a lot of that is like having the good sense of knowing when those certain times are. Sometimes like you can just like, yeah, I'm going to pull that cord. I'm going to totally do it right now. And other times it's like, well, it makes a little bit more sense. Let me, you know, wait, hold off for a little bit. And then when I have this, or once this is done, I can do this way better. So
yeah,
also having that foresight to know when those times are is also a good thing too. And but it's also another thing is just trying a lot of different things. Maybe you try one thing and it doesn't work out. That shouldn't stop you from trying other things. You can say like, well, I tried this one thing, I'll just try nothing else for the rest of my life because I tried this one thing and it didn't work out. Not everything is going to stick. Hell, my
so
mom
the
tried
way
to...
I look at it, and this is kind of my thought process for 2021 is, mm-hmm. a few years ago, I got into investing, right? Like personal investing, trying to take care of my future, trying to make sure there's money in the bank if I pass away, that my kids can go to school and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And I just remember a boss of mine, at my last job, he was one that kind of got me to pick it up. Mm-hmm. And he said something to me that honestly haunted me for almost a full year. I could not shake this thought. And it was, don't wake up 10 years from now wishing you had done this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And honestly, like that, it stuck with me. And I'll never forget where I was standing in his office the day that he said that to me. And so I've sort of shifted my thinking into that with the shop is, I don't want to wake up 10 years from now wishing I had done something 10 years ago. And so I'm a doer. I'm attacking this year. Like I'm going to really take all that time that I have. And I've already, you know, start this year, like January 1, really before January 1, I was in my shop reorganizing, resituating, getting the workflow kind of put together, cleaning up sawdust off the floor, like all those things that kind of help you revive that like drive and that desire and that like fun passion.
Oh, yeah.
Standing out there, you know, not looking at like the mess that gets in the way of doing anything. I'm just trying to remove all those obstacles now so that we're hitting the ground running this year.
Agreed. Yeah. And like, even when I did my reorganization of, you know, my space before I moved, and like, at least even before that, like every day I would go out and just, you know, sweep, clean up, make sure I had a clean space, you know, clear head. And then I reorganize it to make it more efficient. And then it's just like the energy changes and then you feel like jump-started. And speaking of like from there, like jump-starting, like, tell me more about your business. Like, what was really, I know you said like it started off on like as a hobby and people asking for things. Mm-hmm. Where was really the jumping off point? Like, I want to take it from hobby to full on business and to where it is now.
Yeah. That's a good question. I think originally when I realized that it was something that I could do, I think was when other people recognized better than I could where there was value in my work. Like for me, it was really fun and I liked doing it. I think when people started asking for the things that were more than just like bottle openers, more than just, you know, like the simple kind of knickknack kind of stuff, I got to start putting together furniture and I got to start putting together like home decor and doing some artwork. And it was those kinds of things. I think other people's confidence in my ability helped develop my confidence in my ability. And that's actually when the whole like brand kind of came together. I challenged, you know, myself, but my wife really, again, she kind of helped drive this idea of like, look, if you're going to do this, do it, you know, like commit to it, you know, let, if it's paying for itself and you're doing something with it, like really let it take shape. And so the brand, like the Make for Life brand, was something that I thought about for, 9-10 months. I mean, it really, it gestated for a long time before I launched anything, and I held on to it real closely. And I only pitched it to like my inner circle, you know, friends and people whose trust, were really, really there for me. Like, and the idea is, and you know, I don't know if this is necessarily where the question was going, but the brand is built on three tenets, right? So Make for Life kind of stands for three basic things. One, when I make something, it's going to last for life, right? So it's heirloom quality. And I really, really try to stick to that. I don't take jobs for people who want, you know, a coffee table for $75, because I could build you a coffee table for $75, but it's going to last you for 75 days. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take that job. The second tenet is, I also want to not only be a maker for my entire life, but I also, this is where kind of the YouTube comes in. I want to encourage other people. That's why this community, you know, the woodworking Instagram, Facebook community is so important, because I get to be around other people who I can encourage. And, you know, guys like you, guys like Andy Pugh, Dean DePlantis, Vincent Ferrari. I mean, I could list like a dozen names right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Who are pushing me to continue doing what I'm doing. That is going to help me kind of stay on this path for a really long time. And I would like to be a maker for the rest of my life, get my son to start making and be a maker for the rest of his life. Even if he doesn't pick up woodworking, even if he wants to get whatever else he does. Like, I mean, you're a chef. I'd consider that making. That's a whole other skill that I don't have, but you're making something, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're making a lot of times making something from nothing.
Yeah, exactly right. And then the third tenet is that I want for my business to really stand for something. I wanted it to mean, I want, you know, everybody kind of talks in these cliches about wanting to make an impact, wanting to leave a legacy and all these things. And that was something I wanted to make sure that wasn't just like a turn of phrase for me. And so it's really important that my business is going to benefit human life. So I'm literally making for the sake of life. And that's kind of how I word it in my three tenets. a great example of how I was able to kind of make that happen recently was a very close friend of mine here in Wake Forest is they're adopting. And so I was able to contribute a few items to an auction that all the proceeds went towards paying for their adoption, because adoption is friggin' expensive.
Yeah, expensive. Ridiculous. But that's awesome.
And so, you know, to be able to have something that I could just give away for the sake of them, you know, growing their family and expanding their family and taking in a life that otherwise would want to be discarded was that to me is like, that's everything. And so as the channel, as the brand, as the business grows, I have plans for how to kind of give that stuff back. And so like
you literally made something for life.
Exactly. Right.
That's amazing. That concept.
And I'll tell you the worst nightmare for me is that I wake up one day and I realize that this whole thing was for my ego. If I ever wake up and I feel like that's happened, I'm done. Like I'm out. I'll shut the channel down with no warning.
You just be out like peace, deuces.
Yeah, that's it. I'll literally drop a mic on my phone, break Instagram, peace out. I don't think that's how Instagram works, but
I don't think so either. But
I don't think you can drop a mic on the settings button.
You might be, you know, like if there's like a little icon, little dude that just drops it for you. It's like, all right, you're done.
That's exactly right.
Exit stage left. But speaking of Instagram, so social media, we know you're soon to start YouTube, but you're actually been pretty active on Instagram.
Yeah.
So what led to that? Was that mostly just promote the business and just share what you've been making? Because you make some pretty cool stuff, and I've been perusing through it recently. I usually do it during my feed whenever I see it. Like I know you recently got a lathe several months back now, but you've been putting that thing to work, man.
Oh,
like
I love
making
it,
like the pens and the ornaments, mm-hmm. and all sorts of stuff. And
yeah,
I remember when you first got it, we joked that like, cause Justin Bear Macon, you know, he does pen turning, and then you turn mm-hmm. the pen and you're like, oh crap. Like Ben's stay in your lane, Ben. Ben's starting to step on yep. Justin's toes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Instagram, I think for me, probably started the same as everybody else. Like I was trying to just earn money. You know, like I was trying to promote myself, basically, like putting mm-hmm. products out there. Hey, I can make a thing. You want to buy one, you know? And what I've done is, I think I overlooked early on the value of the community that's out there on Instagram. And that's probably been the biggest takeaway for me is just networking. And mm-hmm. and I don't do a lot of like shameless plugging of my stuff. Like I'll make a thing for myself. Like you know, if you looked at my Instagram, I think my latest post or one of my latest posts was some wine bottle toppers, like, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I just had a kit in my garage and I was like, hey, you know, I think today's the day. I'll just go ahead and finally make some wine bottle stoppers. And so I did, and I made them, and you know, I don't drink enough wine to need a bunch of wine bottle stoppers. And so I just put them on Instagram. I was like, hey, you know, does anybody want these? And that's the kind of stuff where it's like organic sales, but not necessarily for the sale itself.
Right. You know,
like if this was a job already, if the shop was my primary income, of course I'd be putting stuff out there like that. But a lot of times it's just for me to kind of push that creativity mm-hmm. out somewhere. My wife always sees everything first. She's like my first check at the door. Like I literally walk in with just about every pen that I turn, every
control.
Project that I make, or if it's a big piece, like I'll bring her out to the shop and I'm like, hey, come look at this thing. Mm-hmm. And if it passes her approval, then it will see Instagram next or Facebook next. And there's a part of that that's to drive the business, but then there's also a part of it that's to kind of like be just a part of this expression of creativity and expression of workmanship. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the most creative person in the world. I like to think that a lot of my stuff is really kind of clean and simple. Back to the beer conversation at the beginning. I don't want to overdo things. So I try to keep really clean, simple lines. Simple but not simple, if that makes
right.
sense. One of the biggest compliments I ever received from somebody was they said that to me. They're like, your stuff is really simple, but it's not like simple, simple. And I was like, that means a lot more to me than you might think.
Because, simple yet elegant is what they mean to say.
Yeah, exactly right. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I just like being, I really enjoy being a part of the community there. And I think that the sales and the business being able to grow has been a really nice byproduct of that. But at the moment, at least, it's not like I'm a driving force is to make, you know, some
make
money.
Sales, yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
No, to swing it back around to the beer conversation, I wonder if those wine stoppers could be used for beer. So, maybe something you want to look into.
So I actually, here at the house, I was kind of playing around with a few different designs. And I was thinking, like, you know, because to be honest with you, the only people that reached out for or reached out to me for the wine bottle stoppers were women, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people just associate women more with wine and men more with like whiskey or whatever, which whatever. Gender stereotypes aside, I was thinking like I might try to make some to go into like whiskey bottles or rum bottles. And mm-hmm. like you said earlier about the different types of bottles that are out there these days.
Oh yeah.
I tried it on the, you know, four or five different bottles of liquor I have in my cabinet, and it fit some of them perfect. And it didn't fit some of them at all. And, you know, I couldn't even get it into the bottle of another one. Like it's funny because liquor bottles are so much more varied
than wine
bottles are.
And it's funny. I was actually listening to another podcast. I think it was Morley's Into the Spotlight, or it was either that one or Clamp.
Did you just plug another podcast on your own podcast?
I know.
What kind of heresy is this?
Horrible. But yeah, I've been going through his catalog and trying to catch up there because, you know, trying to support my friends. But they were talking about, you know, liquor bottles and like how, and like really, they don't really have anything else to distinguish themselves by except for like, yeah, you have your brand logo, but really just the bottle and like the shape of the bottle and how like the lines and the curves and how you want to design the bottle is really the only thing that they have to distinguish themselves by. So that's why they're so varied and, you know, widely different between all of them. You can't just have like, all right, here's one round bottle red, and then here's round bottle blue, and then here's green, black, and like just all the colors, and then like, all right, different names. You got to be a little bit more creative than, like, this is one of the ways where those companies are a little bit more creative to try and set theirs apart from the other. Like, if like everyone knows what a Crown Royal bottle looks like, everyone knows what a Jack Daniels bottle looked like, everyone knows what a Johnny Walker bottle looks like, and they're just iconic. Like, everyone knows what a Grey Goose bottle looks like, but it's because they didn't have much in the way of what they could stand out with, but what they did have to work with, they ran with, and they designed well to be iconic for that. So I think going into like, you know, those different limitations, and it's something that's very common with my work as well, like not so much self-imposed limitations, but just limitations that are imposed, you know, due to outside forces, you got to work with what you got. And sometimes those create really unique and interesting ideas. And you kind of just, you know, some of the best ideas I think are, you know, born out of necessity and just because you have certain limitations placed that, you know, you have to overcome. It's a challenge to overcome. And I think a lot of great things can come out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. I keep hearing, I feel like that's been a recurring theme with a few different circles lately, is this whole like constrain yourself in order to like generate creativity. And I've tried that. And I think I'm just weird. That stuff doesn't work for me necessarily. Like sometimes it might. Mm-hmm. I find myself, I'll look at a pile of wood and have no clue what to do with it. Or like the Mystery Maker collab that we did with the Zoom group, for instance. You know, it was due on Christmas and today is January 11th. And I still haven't even made the first part of mine yet because I'm a procrastinator and I'm really bad about that. But it was one of those things where I looked at this pile of stuff that I had, you know, Grant Alexander sent it to me and I've got to send it off to another maker. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it and I was like, I don't know what to do. And for like, I mean, literally a month, I looked at this stuff and I could not put my head around it. And it was like the light bulb went off and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And then for me, like my creative process doesn't incubate well, but I don't do well a lot of times,
like sitting on ideas,
having to force myself into that creative mode. Sometimes it's almost like letting go of the have to, that it frees your mind up and it's just like the pieces just fall into place.
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden inspiration hits. And when that happens for me, I almost like have to run out to my shop and just like get my hands on a thing and start working on it, because that's when that creativity builds momentum and then the momentum turns into a product. And I've had, you know, quite a few things that have, you know, I'll make a thing that, you know, I don't know if it's going to sell or not. Maybe it's just going to go in my house and, you know, it's because nobody's going to buy it, but then, you know, I get it done and people seem to love it. So I don't know, like that sounds really self-serving and I don't mean for it to, but
no, not at all.
I just, like, my creativity is more like in the moment, like spontaneous.
Yeah, like when lightning strikes, you got to act. It's like, all right, sorry, kids, yeah. You have to drive yourself to school today. Like that has to work.
That's right. Yeah. Here you go, 10-year-old. Here's the keys. Figure it out.
Exactly. Like, call me when you get there. But we touched on this a little bit, like up until now, and I just kind of want to ask you a little bit more directly about the community. You know, we've mentioned it a few times in here. I've shared my thoughts about the community on this podcast several times, and I just want to get your feedback on what you think about the maker community and like how you found it, what has been your overall impression of it, and just your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing negative to say about the maker community that is on Instagram and on Facebook and, you know, even locally. I really miss, like, this is what COVID has done, right? It's making me miss people. Like, I wanted to do craft fairs this year. I wanted to be a part of, like, physically being around other makers. And that's a constraint that we've had. But at the same time, like, that's where the Zoom group that we're a part of really was born out of.
Yes.
And that the community is so strong because, you know, we're able to have these conversations maker to maker where, like, I would trust your opinion on a thing that I'm making more than I would just trust somebody that I met at work who, you know, doesn't even have like the desire to want to make a thing. Like I get people all the time. Like, I, you know, if I have a conversation like, oh, hey, I do woodworking, I do making, I do, you know, some whatever, they'll look at my stuff and they'll start to give me input. And I'm like, yeah, but okay, that doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. And because it's their brain trying to start thinking as a maker, but you guys in this community that has really steeped themselves in how the process works and how inspiration works and how creativity is pushed out differently in different, you know, places. Mm-hmm. I trust those kinds of voices. And so I've really been sharpened a lot, in the community. I don't know. It's just, I think it's really, really great anytime you have a group of people who share the same kind of interests, even if, you know, one person's a woodworker and another person's a leather worker and somebody else does computer electronics and somebody else does whatever, to have that same like common thread, the through line of, hey, at the end of the day, we're making a thing that wasn't a thing yesterday. I really like to be inside of those people's brains to see how, like, what our common ground really is and what I can pull from them, you know, for my future as a maker.
Agreed. Yeah. And just to me, like, one of the aspects of it that I love is like I said, this giant pool of knowledge that you can draw from of, and not just like one area, many different areas that can relate to each other, intersect and, you know, what have you, just this giant pool of knowledge that people are genuinely and like amazingly willing to share at any given moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just see inspiration. Like you were saying, like we're a lot of our driving force, like yours and mine, and like pretty much everybody that we know in this community, is to also inspire. It's not just like, just keep it solitary. No, this is what I do. I'm the only one that does it. Nobody else. It's to inspire other people to say, hey, like I do this thing, but you could do it too. Or you could do something else. It's really up to you. No matter what it is you want to do, you can do something else if you want to.
Yeah.
Or you could do this thing.
And to shout out to like, you know, another one of your podcast colleagues, Vincent Ferrari. I mean, he had a statement, you know, a long time back, it feels like, the whole plus minus equals mentality of, you know, I think it was I think it was Ken Shamrock, and I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that's who he said quoted this whole idea. But the idea of getting better in this plus minus equals environment is you stay around people who are better than you. You stay around people who are the same as you, and you stay around people who are not as good as you. And the idea is that you can pull some people up, you can get pulled up by others, and you can kind of help the similar people on your level rise up together, right? And I really love that. And that to me, I think, is the manifestation of the maker community, is that, yeah, you've got those guys that are out there. Like, I love the fact that Jimmy Duresta is active in the community. Like, he's upper echelon, like, you know, godfather of making or whatever, right? He's one of those guys that, like, you know, if you're a maker, you know the name. But he's really interactive in the community. And so if you reach out to him, he's likely to reach back. And I haven't done that myself personally. I haven't had a reason to.
Right.
But there's also guys that, you know, who are just getting started. I get messages all the time from people who are just getting started. Hey, what would you recommend for this? What kind of finish? What kind of tool? What kind of whatever? And I love that, because the more honest people can be, the better it's going to affect your abilities down the road, right? Like if I come in and I'm just smug and I'm like, I can't learn anything from you, I'm not going to learn anything from you. But if I come in vulnerable and open to be taught, I'm only going to be made better by that. And so I really find myself resonating with people whose egos don't get in the way, who like can be teachable. But I really, really respect the guys who are above me who are also willing to teach.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, and like, it's amazing to me, like even like for me now, like the fact that like, you know, I do my thing and I make when I can and like stuff that I like and, or for other people. And I had this one kid like post on one of my videos and like was asking me questions about like this wooden shield that I did and asked me like, hey, how did you do that? Is it durable? I'm trying to make this thing and, you know, for wood shop and like, I don't have a lot of money. Like what were some options? I gave him, you know, my ideas, what I thought, you know, and he's like, you know, thanks so much for your help. You seem nice. I'm going to subscribe and this and that. But even like beyond that, the fact that he thought well enough of me and my work to ask me his question. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I was, you know, I gave my opinion, he, like, it was helpful to him, to me, was, like, beyond anything I could have ever, like, thought of before. Because, like, I just do this, you know, as a hobby. I've been slowly gathering the knowledge, but it's so amazing to me that anyone would be able to, you know, find what I know helpful from this. But it's also very inspiring and, you know, makes me happy that I'm able to help somebody.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree.
So, all right, we're about at that halfway point. So we're going to take a break. You're going to hear my sultry voice as we take a break for the ad spot. We're going to do our thing, come back, and then we're going to get back into it. All right, and we'll see you guys in a little bit. All right, break.
Yeah, cool, man.
Cool. You need to use the bathroom or anything? Checking the wife?
I'm good to go, man. I got the kids in, like, they're not in bed right now, but they're just like, they got quarantined to their rooms. It's like, you're not allowed to come downstairs. You're not allowed to be loud in the microphone or anything. So once you go up to your room, you can just play for an hour and then go to bed.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to check out my wife and
yeah, you're good, man.
Get another drink and I'll be right back. All right.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm going to grab another beer too.
And we're back, and it's still me and still Ben here. So thanks so much for still being here at this moment. Hey, hi, Ben. Thanks.
Well, I wasn't saying hi to you.
Well, I'm glad that you're still here. You could have cut out me in a break. You don't know. But we were talking.
I was saying hi to your fantastic, you know, audience.
Oh, yeah. And they are fantastic indeed. And I have a review, actually, I want to read at the end of this. I have it written down here so I don't forget.
Excellent.
Says our fans are great, and we're super grateful for all of them, and super shocked that we get any at all, truthfully. But
no, y'all are killing it, man.
So we were, thank you, I appreciate that. We were talking a little bit during the break. I was showing off my new can of Wood Balm, like one of the products that you do, and you're asking me if I got it through you, and I didn't actually. I got it from our mutual friend Vincent Ferrari because I got a cutting board from him, and you actually. Linked up with Vincent to every time that he sells a cutting board, they get a can of your Wood Balm. So you guys have a collaboration going that mutually beneficial, which is really cool. And tell me more about like how that kind of started. Cause I know Vincent, he's had his business for a while and like selling cutting boards. And then you were just kind of, you know, starting in and like really, I think solidifying this product, like you were doing a few things and then you started doing this as well. And you kind of got together and said, this is mutually beneficial. Right. And said like, you decided to start working together.
Yeah. So, you know, part of me trying to get the making being the full time, is, you know, streams of revenue. Right. So, I mean, like if it's going to be a business, you got to think about it like a business person. You can't just let the creative artisan be in control all the time. Like you got to let the business mind kind of take over every now and then. The Wood Balm was something that, I don't know. I wasn't really interested in making like product per se. And I tried it to make it for myself for a couple of things. And I honestly really, really loved it. And it's just one of those things where like, if I'm going to make it and other people are commenting on the finish or the quality of the way that the wood feels on a cutting board or a table or something like that, I figured, you know, it's going to be beneficial to anybody, right? So I started selling it. Went, you know, got my you know, branded, you know, tins and everything. I love, like, this is me personally, again, not trying to be egotistical or anything, but I love the way, like, the black tins look with the black and white branding of the Make for Life. Like, it's very, very, like, thought out to not have, yeah, like, too much color.
I gotta say, it's a sexy looking tin. It really is.
Yeah. That's the short way to say it. But yeah, so when Vincent saw that I was selling those, he came out and he asked me, you know, like, hey, you know, are you looking to wholesale any of that stuff? And I wasn't, but it was the first time that I had even considered it. And to me, it made a lot of sense to start thinking in those terms, because it may not make a lot of sense if I'm not selling at a craft fair to sell one tin here, one tin there. Cause I've got it listed on my Etsy page, but honestly, I don't move a lot of it there. Like, I move a few cans here and there, but it's not like a hot ticket item. Plus Etsy's probably saturated with people that do something similar to this.
Right.
What I've found as a business stream is to hook up with other makers, who, like Vincent, you know, he sells cutting boards, and his words to me was, this makes a value add for my product, and it makes a value add for his brand, but it also creates a value add for my brand, you know? And so people that I don't have access to, that door gets open for me through Vincent. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's definitely mutually beneficial. Plus, you know, I make money on it, you know, and I get to give him a huge discount on it. And so he gets to make some money on it if he sells it, or if he's going to, you know, include it as part of his, you know, cutting board, mm-hmm. he's just going to kind of price it into his model. So he's right. going to make money on it, even if it's just as simple as, you know, somebody buys a cutting board from him once, and then in a couple of years needs to buy another tin of the wood bomb, they're probably going to go to him to get that wood bomb, you know, right. because I don't have a SKU. I'm not, you know, available at Home Depot or Lowe's or anything like that. I'm not even in, like, the local, you know, country stores or anything around here yet.
I like that on there, yet.
But yeah, I mean, it does help me, you know, bring in a little bit of income, but it also, like, what I've also done is I've sent him, I was just telling you during the halftime show, I sent him a tin of this new, like, formula that I'm working on. So I actually kind of messed with the ratio of the ingredients to kind of improve the quality of the balm itself. And I just sent him one. So he's going to beta test one for me. And I've given a few of those away to other people, mm-hmm. just to kind of get some insight of, does it work better? Does it end up with a better, I like it personally, but, you know, I'm a huge blind spot to myself, right? It's like we right. all are. And so I want to make sure that I get some input from it.
Of course.
And speaking of the yet part of that, like, I'm actually looking at having conversations with some of the general store managers and the Ace Hardware store managers and things like that around this area, just to see if I can't wholesale it to them. Hey, you know, for this much per tin, you can buy it, and then you can mark it up this much and make some dollars. And, you know, those are the kind of places where I think that you see people buying local, you see people buying small business, and it makes a lot of sense. And then if I ever get to do the craft fair scene, you know, which I want to do, then it's one of those impulse buys. It's not expensive. It's not, you know, yeah, whatever, but it's still high quality, mm-hmm. and it just works.
Agreed. And, like, you know, my uncle always used to say when I was, like, asking girls out, like, the worst they could say is no.
Yeah, right.
And I say that as a joke, but it's really true. You know, like, the worst they can say is no. Like, you tried, you asked, and you're not any worse off for not asking, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, if you ask and they say yes, then, hey, that's money in the bank. Now you've made a connection. I can't tell you.
That's the funny thing about having it, too, is that, like, the downside is that now I just have a bunch of finish at my house that I get to use on my own projects, and I still saved a bunch of money versus going to buy the stuff at the store.
Exactly. Everybody wins.
There's literally no way for me to lose here.
Don't you love it when that happens?
Exactly right. See, I'm wicked smart.
Wicked smart, man. Thank God. Are you from Boston? I thought you were from North Carolina.
I only know one Boston phrase, and that's it. You just got it. You got all of the Boston part of me.
I got everything that was there. All right, cool. I'm glad you graced us with that.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody else gets that but you. You heard it here, folks. Exclusive.
You only get it here. Tune in next week to hear Ben say.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, yeah. Good times, like always. And, like, I really enjoy our Zoom meetings. I haven't been able to get on them lately because of my conflicting work schedule. But,
yeah,
that was really, like, when 2020 was really at one of its lowest, like, that was one of the highlights that kind of kept me above water. There was, like,
yeah, for sure.
Being able to actually connect with other like-minded people that were so positive and encouraging and really kind of helping me through, like, ideas that I had and saying, like, it's okay to try and try new things and, like, try these, you know, videos or projects or whatever. Like, it's cool to do that. Like, you don't need to, like, necessarily cower in a corner, like, shame this is some kind of, like, you know, bad thing. Like, it's, you can be open with it. You can be cool. You can share this, and it's okay, you know?
Yeah. So I've got a question for you. Let me put you on the hot seat for just a second.
Oh, you're going to flip this on me? You're going to flip it? Okay,
just,
cool,
yeah. Just for 1 second. So I want to know from you, like, because one of the things that I like to do is I don't like to do the same thing over and over again, right? I always tell people, like, I'd rather make 1,000 things one time than to make one thing 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you seem to be kind of the same way from the stuff that I've seen you post, where it's like, it always seems like you're kind of coming up with something new. Where did the idea of the nunchucks come from? Like, talk to us about the nunchucks.
Of all the things, you picked the nunchucks?
Yeah.
Okay. So the nunchucks, honestly.
Did you just need to give somebody a beating? You came home and you were like, somebody's got to get it good. Someone make a weapon.
My lawyer said I'm not allowed to talk about that. But no, honestly, the nunchucks, there's a few things with that. One, it's a relatively simple project. So it's just like two pieces of round stock, you know, wood that you drill two, like three holes into technically. And then you string them up and that's pretty much it. You know, you don't really have, you can go a little bit more technical. You can make them like octagons and you do angles on them. You can run over the edges and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's a pretty simple project. The other thing too is that I enjoy martial arts personally. So I've always been curious about it. And like, you know, we were talking about earlier, like YouTube is a wealth of knowledge. If you want to like learn anything on your own, you can see people demonstrating nunchucks and certain techniques and basic practice routines. So I decided like, you know, screw it. I'm going to make a set, you know, cause I've always wanted to try it. I want to see how difficult it is or how simple it is. And it's actually like, once you it's like anything, it seems difficult at first, but once you start practicing on it, it becomes way more accessible. Like, it becomes easier as you go. So for me, the nunchucks, it was a simple project that I can make a video of with relative ease. And it was, I could do it quick enough to where, you know, I can bust out this video and slowly improve my video skills there, improve my woodworking skills, improve my martial arts skills, and have, you know, something else that I could do daily during this downtime and practice and kind of occupy my mind and stretch my thinking in a new way. And just another way to relax as well, you know, taking a few minutes here and there just to like practice, you know, spinning my nunchuck and like the different grabs and throws. It just,
what you folks at home can't see is that he's been steadily spinning these nunchucks the whole time he's describing this. It's fantastic to watch.
Yeah. Like, you can't see this figure eight I'm doing, but it's rad.
Okay, but the real important question: Have you hit anybody with them? Have you had to employ them in use of force?
No, I can honestly say that I have not had an occasion to like whip out my nunchucks and defend my life with them.
So So wait a minute. Hang on a second, because that response implies that you have them on you, ready to be whipped out. Do you carry your nunchucks with you on
the
daily?
No, I don't carry my nunchucks with me.
Or is that on. That just what you want us to think?
I mean, you could think whatever you want. Wink, wink. No, I don't carry nunchucks on me. Like, they're here. They're at home. I actually haven't practiced with them in a while. I should. Like, I got the basic, you know, bottom, over the shoulder, behind the back, you know, crossover moves down, like the really basic stuff. And that's really all I want to learn. That's, in essence, really all that you need to learn to really as a stepping off point to other things. But I just do it like, it improves your hand-eye coordination, you know, improves your timing. And for me, it's like I can use it as a moment of zen. Like I said, I enjoy martial arts. I enjoy martial arts with the discipline. and for like just being able to just kind of center yourself and like have more control over yourself. And like you can, you know, like all you can have all these range of motions, but when you're like kind of focused on doing certain movements or training movements or practicing or doing sparring, you kind of like the rest of the world is kind of gone and you're just here in this like area of focus. And I enjoy that, to be able to kind of like just kind of forget everything else. And like, I'm in this moment, this state of Zen, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And being able, I can just kind of breathe, relax, and not have to worry about anything else. I can just solely focus on what I'm doing, improving on that, and you know, not really anything else. It kind of just makes things a lot easier.
And see, I could confidently say without even the smallest bit of variance, I would knock myself out every single time I use them.
I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't hurt myself with them. I'm just saying that I've gotten a little bit better.
It's just Zen. It's just Zen beating yourself up.
As my wife laughs over here in the corner.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, they were a fun, and it's the same thing for why I built like the Sheikah Wood Katana or the Claymore. Or like hell, even like the big battle axe and stuff like that. The battle axe is a little more impractical, but the katana and the claymore and stuff like that, just because I enjoy weapons, I enjoy the martial arts of them and the training and the discipline of them and being able to use them and use them effectively. So yeah, it's kind of like the same thing with guns. Am I just going around like walking out into the street waving my gun around? No, but I like being able to have that knowledge on my side of like how to properly handle a weapon, how it works, you know, how it works. If I understand how it works, it scares me less. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can react to a situation with them in a better way. You know, it's putting knowledge on my side. The cool G.I. Joe knowing is half the battle.
Right. Knowing how to use nunchucks is also part of the battle.
Exactly. Like if someone wanted to pull a thing, like a pair of nunchucks on me, I would kind of know how to deal with that. Someone pulled a wooden sword on me. Again, I would have some background into that. So like, you know, you kind of screwed up the handle a little bit. You didn't use enough wood putting in there. And like, I can kind of see where you put like too much super glue. Let me show you how to fix it. Come here.
So you just break the spirit first.
Exactly. I had to completely break their spirit and say, like, this is it with so critique. Shoddy. Did you make this? Did your friend make this? Like, tell me you made this.
Oh, man.
But yeah. So switch this back around. Now that my question is over, which is a good question, by the way. I got to admit, that was a really thoughtful question. I appreciate that. So what are some of your future endeavors? So you have your business now, you mm-hmm. have another business, you have Vincent that you partnered with, so wholesale your wood mm-hmm. bomb. I know you want to do more craft shows once those become available, connect with more mm-hmm. makers.
Yeah.
Where does it go from here? Where does the business go from here? The day job, everything. Like what's the future?
No, that's a great question. Let me say this. There's half of this answer is it's a secret. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are some plans that I have that I'm working on now. And I don't mean to be like shrouded in, you know, mystery or like mystique or anything like that. I just mean that like part of this stuff is kind of close to the vest. You know, mm-hmm. I want to, you know, get there in my time. You know,
meaning he'll tell me when none of you are listening.
No, but for the most part, I mean, I just want to keep increasing my capabilities. 2020 was a really crazy year for my schedule. The job that I took on after my COVID career switch was brutal on my schedule. Just brutal. There were some weeks when I would do 60 hours a week, just Thursday through Saturday. And then I was still working other days in the week. So I was literally just nonstop working for about 7 or 8 months. I recently was able to kind of move into a different position in the company. And now I have a lot of that time back. And so I'm really like, I'm so energized about 2021, really, really kind of reinvigorating that part of me that wants to like do bigger things and make better projects. And I've actually been able to already this year, I mean, it's January 11th, and I've already been able to say yes to a couple of really big projects that I otherwise would have had to say no to.
Awesome.
So I think that I'm looking to kind of organically grow the custom part of my business. You know, when somebody comes to me and says, hey, you know, I want this thing, you know, if we can reasonably land on a budget, then I'm going to take that job. I'm going to build that thing. Another part of the business has been, and it, I hope it continues to be this way, things like with Vincent, you know, partnering with other makers to not just like push my own product, but to kind of support their work as well. Like I really hope, Vincent, if you're listening, I really hope that my add-on to your business is helping your business. Like I that's what I want. I don't want for people just to be buying my product. I want it to add value, right? That's what I want from that kind of relationship. And then another place where I'm kind of starting to see a little bit of traction is I was able through another maker on Instagram, a guy is a knife maker out in Eureka, Kansas. And we'd never met, we never talked, we exchanged back and forth on Instagram, kind of just casually and everything. Got him Matt Vogt, V-O-G-T is his last name, Matt Vogt. He's a great knife maker. He got a deal with a butcher shop up on Long Island to be a custom knife maker for them. And they said, hey, we'd love to pair this up with some cutting boards. What would you think about coming on and, you know, being a cutting board maker? I said, okay, great. I'll make you guys some cutting boards. And so I was able to kind of partner with Matt and go into this butcher shop during the holiday season. And they bought, you know, kind of in the same model, they wholesale bought a bunch of butcher block cutting boards from me. They get stamped, you know, wood burned their logo on the back. My logo goes on it as well. They were happy to let me support, you know, my own business with my own brand. And then they get artisanally made, you know, handcrafted work that they can then sell to their audience. And I really look forward to doing more stuff like that. Like, a close friend of mine in Charlotte, North Carolina is a real estate agent. And he and I are kind of working on some details to do basically that same kind of deal where he wants to have some cutting boards, charcuterie boards, little like home decor kind of things that he can leave when he sells a home as a moving in gift to his clients. And that creates a really good stream of revenue for me that I can make some of those things in batches, which becomes an efficiency win for me. And it becomes part of that income that will help sustain me wanting to do custom work and me being able to afford at some point to put that resignation letter together to my, you know, to whatever employer that I have at that time. So it's a loose plan for the future. But the way that I see it is there's a target that I have to hit. Now I just have to kind of navigate towards it. And so, you know, every step that I take between now and hitting that target has to be in the direction of that target. So I'm trying to be strategic. I'm trying to be, you know, smart about it, but I'm also, you know, trying to hustle. I'm really trying to put the time in now, you know, to make sure that dream comes true.
Right. Excellent. And like, I like how you kind of like tied in one of our original thoughts there of like, you know, the quantifiable goals of like, you have an idea of things that you want to hit and like this target that you're trying to attain and like you're working your way towards there. And like I said, like you getting that, the cutting board deal and the collab and all that's awesome, man. And like, I hope nothing but success and that, you know, things just keep working out for you like that. And, you know, you're able to, like I said, send in your resignation letter and hopefully your boss is not listening to this right now and doesn't like kick you out the next day. You got at least a week. So, you know, you have a head start.
Well, I don't anticipate that day's coming anytime really soon. You know, it's going to be a little while. The journey is just begun, but you know, it's a journey, right? Like, you know, you exactly. keep moving moving towards it.
Yeah, exactly. And like anything that you do, I mean, hell, like your last job, I'm sure that wasn't like, you know, that didn't take a year or even 2 years to get to where you were. It probably took several years. Like it didn't take a months or however long, like a year, or even 2 years or 3 years. It took me like almost 11 years to be able to get to where I am now.
Yeah.
And so things take time. And
yeah,
I think a big lesson that I think people can take away from this is that don't be mad if things aren't working out as fast as you would hope them to. Like things take time. Sometimes things take a long time and you just kind of got to have that fortitude to keep with it and realize that some things take longer than others and you just kind of got to ride that wave with it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that a lot of the time, I mean, you know, we talked earlier how, I mean, my business has been, I've been doing this trying to move towards a business for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And I really do feel like it's just kind of part of paying your dues to the process of really kind of making mistakes to start out with. Like if I could go back and do this whole journey over again, starting at day one, I would do a lot of things differently, you know? And I think I would hone in on a couple of things more than just trying to get everything in all at once. Like for instance, I just told a guy yesterday, we were talking about woodworking. He's like, yeah, I'd love to get into that kind of stuff, but I don't know what to do. I was like, buy a lathe. First tool any woodworker should buy should be a lathe, because it's a single tool. You buy a couple of, you know, lathe tools to go with it, and then you can make a business off of having a lathe. And I've seen tons of people do it. And then I mean, you just let that grow. Like, let the lathe pay for the table saw. Let the table saw pay for the miter saw, whatever, like so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Where I just kind of threw myself into it headlong and didn't realize where I was going. But I think that's for me, at least, that was an important part of the journey, in that I've really learned how to say no, how to say yes, like the right ways, because I've taken jobs that really beat me down. And that's just part of that, you know, like, you know, it goes along right with the theme of you guys' podcast, the whole figuring it out thing, right?
Yep.
Is until you've taken some of those lumps, people can't tell you to avoid this. Listen, I've got two kids. I can tell my kids until I'm blue in the face, don't do this, don't do that, don't blah, blah, blah. But until they go do the thing and then see the consequences themselves, they don't learn the lesson. And so I just think that's a really important part of the process. And so I love, I feel like I'm way off the point now, but that's why I really love doing what I'm doing and pushing towards a goal. It's because there are times when I can look back on those benchmarks in the past and see, like, the guy a year and a half, 2 years ago was a friggin' mess. And not to say that I'm not a mess now, but I'm a mess with a haircut, or a mess with like a clothes or something like that. And it's like, you know, I've learned how to kind of focus a little bit better. And I don't know. Like I get more energized the further along I'm able to take this thing.
And I think that's probably the perfect way to say it. Like, and I think that, like, you becoming more energized as you're doing it, I mean, it just means that you're on the right path. And like I said, I have nothing but respect for you, for how you've been doing your business and like where you're going. And like I said, I wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully, like, you know, we're still friends in the future. And I really want to keep this going for a while. All my maker friends, like I said, I've had, I've been so thankful for you and for everybody in the group and everyone that I've connected with. And like I said, I hope that things just, you know, keep going with you. And like, you're going to start your YouTube channel this year. And if there's anything that I can help with that, please feel free to reach out to me, or anybody, you know, that's doing them. And yeah, that's it. And so enough of that mushy stuff. So, all right, now it's time to get in.
Do something manly.
Yeah, now we're gonna do some push-ups and like sling my nunchucks around. So now let's start wrapping this up, and we're gonna get into our maker shout-outs. So you've had a solid hour to think about this. I hope you have one.
So
since you're our guest, you get to go first.
I wish you could give me like 10. To be honest, like, I've got so many people that I wish I could put their stuff out there. And let me say, I want to say one, give me one freebie, because I've already kind of mentioned him. Matt Vogt Custom Blades.
Okay.
MattVogt Custom Blades on Instagram. He does some fantastic work. Matt and I have been working together now for a few months. Great, great guy. I want to see him really, really take off. He's one of those guys. He's a weekend warrior. He's an evening, you know, nights and weekends kind of guy. I want to see him turn this full time as well. Fantastic maker. I've got one of his knives in my kitchen drawer right now, and it's one of the best knives I have. I love it.
Sweet. Excellent. Yeah. And I truly appreciate knife making as well. So yeah, we'll definitely link him in the show notes. And Matt, we'll try and get you some more traffic as well.
But then my non-freebie, the guy that I want to do a maker shout out for, is another guy who, our Instagram relationship is sort of one of those like fringe relationships. Like we comment on each other's stuff. We like each other's things, but I probably have more respect for him and his work than he realizes. Is a channel. It's Kirkman Original, K-I-R-K-M-A-N Original. He's a guy out of Portland. He has got some of the most beautiful resin art that I've ever seen. And resin art's one of those things. It's a really polarizing field because I do resin work. I get a lot of orders for tables and coasters and, you know, all these kinds of things. And I think people in the maker community feel like it's worn out. But when you go look at Kirkman's stuff, like when you look at this guy's channel, I mean, it's everything he makes is gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm looking at his Instagram right now.
Oh, it's fan. He's one of my favorite. Like when his stuff comes up on my feed, I always stop. And yeah, I always look at every picture and I always try to interact with him whenever I see stuff come through, because man, he's in the echelon of resin art. He is up there in my opinion. And it's funny. I don't know why, but he doesn't have like 140,000 followers. And his stuff's beautiful.
Yeah, he's only got 1,030, and that's, to me, I mean, he's got 1,031 right now.
And that's a tragedy.
That is. And he's got 844 posts. This is insane. And like you said, his stuff is beautiful. Like the way he's able to mix the wood and the resin and the waves, and the grain and the wood with the resin, which you think would be easy, but it's really harder than you think because of like the way that the resin moves while it's curing. It's really not that easy. And like the way that you have to mix the colors and such. And like, I mean, you've done it, I've done it. We both know yep. about that. But if you haven't tried it, give it a shot and see how easy it is. Trust me, it's not. But yeah, his stuff is beautiful.
Yeah, so, for yeah, sure.
Definitely good shout out there.
And honestly, like for anybody listening that I didn't name, like there's honestly like 500 people on Instagram who in that like plus minus equals level, I look at as pluses, right? Like way, way above my level. And I'd love to shout out to all those guys and not to take away from them, but not necessarily like the Jimmy Durestas and the David Picciutos. Like a lot of people are sitting around the same, like 1,000 to 1,500, you know, even below that sometimes, like in this, like kind of your everyday weekend warrior, kind of maker group. Like, man, there's some real talent out there. And that's one of the other things I love about the community is like, I get inspired just by looking at other people posting their work. And there's been times I look at Instagram and somebody's post will come through and then bang, I've got to go make something. Cause I'm like, dang, if they're doing that, I gotta go make something to just keep up.
Yeah, you're right. And like I said, it's just so hard to kind of just pick one because there's so many, like I said, so many great makers out there that you'd like to shout out. And like, that's one of the good and the bad things about this is I'm able to shout out and like give some credit to these people, yeah, like, I guess, quote unquote, publicly. But like, the bad thing is I can't shout out as many as I would like. Like sometimes I have to really restrain myself to just pick one or two at a time. Like there'll be more episodes, I hope, in the future where I can keep shouting them out. But yeah, that's one of the good and bad things, but I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to at least, you know, shed some light on these quote unquote lesser known makers that should deserve, you know, yeah, a little bit more recognition. So it's
yeah, cool. And that's how I look at it, man. It's like if I had my way, I'd pump, you know, a bunch of these people like 10,000 extra followers if I could. But man, I'm on the grind to get there myself too. You know, like Instagram's a slog. It really is.
Yeah.
Like it's work. Fickle. Yeah. Oh yeah, man.
I think fickle's a good word for it.
And I've just given up on trying to fight the algorithm. Like I'm not interested, man.
Who knows about the damn algorithm at Instagram? YouTube's easy. Instagram, that's like it has no rhyme or reason. Like I don't even have a good analogy for it right now. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, yeah. YouTube's easy.
Exactly.
Quoted by Jacob. You heard it here first.
It really is. Like you post a video, you put the title, that's done. That's it. That's really all it. On top of like, you know, the description, the tags, and the anyways, moving on. My shout out is going to be actually my namesake, Jacob, over at Other Dog Designs, though, because he made these incredible coasters. And I know you said, yeah, there they are. You got yours.
I've got my beer on them right now. Like, they're sitting right here at the computer.
Mine is sitting underneath a custom whiskey glasses and decanter that my girlfriend got me for my birthday. So that's on the table right now, and that's where they are. They're something special using for something special. And so he made these coasters for everybody in our Discord group, the Makers on Zoom Having Coffee group. because, you know, we do these Zoom meetings, and he put it out there like he wants to do something special for the group, which is, you know, we always appreciate and we're always very supportive. And he said, like, you don't have to pay for the materials, just send some money for the shipping. And he made these amazing coasters with like four different designs. And I honestly thought he was just going to like, you pick one design and just send, you know, send it to whoever picked it. But he did all four designs. And then he did each of our logos in the center on the back. And then Everyone else's logos of everyone else in the group, like around the other four. And that to me is my favorite part. The logos and designs that he did are incredible. That I love having those logos of my friends around, you know, and just like everyone kind of there, and they're just fantastic. So if you have a chance to go check out Jacob at Other Dog Designs. God, I wish I could talk today. Jacob at Other Dog Designs, and, you know, show him some love because he does some really cool stuff. He did a pixel art one of like a mage, a Final Fantasy mage. I don't remember exactly which one it is, but he did that. He does some really funny, really cool, like nerdy kind of like crossing signs as well. And he has a, do you know what kind of laser he has? I don't think it's a Glowforge.
It's not a Glowforge. I couldn't tell you what it is off the top of my head, but I know that it's a different brand.
Mm-hmm. But he does a lot of laser work, and he's really good at it. So definitely if you have a laser or you're getting into it like I am, because I actually just got a laser too, so I'm gonna be
nice. Sort
of tinkering with that, and that sneak peek there. And he does some really brilliant work, so definitely go check him out. And Jacob, thank you for the coasters again. They are really great. Truly appreciate it. I'm gonna be keeping those for a very, very long time.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah, and even aside from the laser stuff, man, like if you go back to his Inktober, you know, drawings, like the guy's got some skills. He's another one of those guys that, like, you know, sometimes it just takes the right eyes on your channel and then it blows up. I think he's gonna see a lot more growth, you know, out of the community than where he's at right now. I don't think where his follower count is not reflective of his talent level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I have to say about that Inktober thing, now that you mentioned that, I'm impressed by a lot of people that did it, but it also makes me hate people a lot more.
For their, like, raw ability to draw.
Exactly.
How many stick figures did you draw? Because for me, it was before I gave up on the Inktober, because I stopped on day four.
I didn't even make it to day one. I was trying to do, like, some really, really... And I think I can say this at the end. I'll just tell Steve where it is. Shitty stick figure picture of a fish. And It really was not working out. I'm like, screw this. I don't have time. I'm not going to. And then as I'm seeing like these beautiful works of art, I'm like, well, screw you guys and your just natural ability. Like, I'm like, no, I'm so happy for you. You guys are amazing. Keep going.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you know, another shout out here to Andy Pugh. I mean, like, he kept going on with the 365 days thing.
Oh yeah, Andy with
he experimented with like the one like I don't know what the style is called, but it's like the one line drawing. He just puts his pen down, doesn't pick it up again until he's done drawing, and the stuff that he's come up with, it's fantastic.
Yeah, he's been doing. I've been following him doing that, and yeah, he's been doing well. I think the style.
Meanwhile, I'm in the corner with like sketch. Finger paints.
Right, exactly. Finger pits, like, I made a turkey.
Yeah. Every day is turkey day because I can trace my hand.
Exactly. That's like, I can do, like, you know, a surfer's S. You know what that is? Like that kind of geometric looking S.
Everybody learned how to draw in like the fourth grade.
Shut up.
No, I'm saying like, that's what.
That's the only thing that I can
draw. I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s. I know it.
I love that thing because that's the only thing that I can draw well.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's about it.
That and then like a three-dimensional box and I'm good to go.
Yes, exactly. The three-dimensional box. Like I can do like maybe like some vines and like with some leaves and stuff like that on a bigger scale. Like I did on that bench that they did. That's like the most artistic talent that you'll ever see out of me. But all right, so those are our shout outs. Good shout outs, Ben. For sure. So next we move on to what we figured out. So what did you figure out this week?
Yeah, so I think what I'm still trying to figure out, and this is a work in progress, is I'm prioritizing efficiency, right? So like with last year being the year of time constraint, This year, I'm not going to have just like nothing but time. And so I'm trying to really make sure that I capitalize on the time that I get. And so like part of reorganizing my shop, part of cleaning everything up was so that when I go out to the shop, I can get to work right away. You know, I know David Picciuto had this thing where like he cleans his shop after every project, and I'm not there yet, but I'm trying to like build some good habits. I'm trying to build some structure in the way that I do things so that I can batch out some of these easier projects a little bit better. You know, walk out there, not have the visual obstacles of just mess all over the place. All of those things, like they kind of free up your mind, but they also just literally free you up physically to walk around and do things. So I'm really, really still trying to figure out, but I'm really working towards kind of getting myself a little bit more efficient in my movement and in my workflow.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. That's definitely a good thing to, you know, hash out, especially if you have a business or you're wanting to start making things more effectively. For me, what I figured out is that Louisiana stays cold for way longer than I thought it does. And it gets like, and I also hate this AC in my apartment, because the thing about it is it's set up like a school. They said a school or a hospital, to where if it's below 52 degrees, it's just going to, even if you have it on cool, it's going to blow hot air, which is annoying as hell, because sometimes it can be cold out there, but the cold air isn't blowing into my apartment. So now I'm just burning up with the open window, and not like, it's not doing crap. And I can't turn on the AC, because then that's just going to be more hot air.
Yeah.
So that's what I figured out, is that it stays cold in Louisiana way longer than I thought. And I could have sworn, well, I guess it is further north than where I was in South Florida, so I should have really anticipated this. But still, I was not expecting it to be this cold for this long. And like cold and wet, too. It was like this morning. I woke up, it's like 39 degrees and raining. What kind of shit is this?
Yeah. See, I grew up down in middle Georgia. Like, that's where I'm from. And so, you know, I grew up in like heat and humidity and just swampy weather all the time. And like, I know you spent time in Florida and everything, so you're used to all of that.
Yeah, but that's fine.
I mean, like winter was like 4 days in January. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of it. And then you move right back into spring.
Exactly.
And then like for here in North Carolina, you know, like it's, you get summer and then fall, and then winter, and then second fall, and then second winter, and then deep winter, and then third spring, you know, like, or third fall. Like, it's just, it gets so crazy for a while, and then all of a sudden it just gets cold and it just kind of stays there. But as I was telling you earlier, like, this is the year where we haven't really seen snow, and so we're just getting like this cold humidity, and so it's just constantly like in your bones, and
right, like just miserable
to like wake up early and be outside or anything like that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I said, like, I'm used to like humidity, it's hot as hell, like, and then like, yeah, torrential downpour rain and all that, but still hot, like all that I can deal with. But then like we had like a week of winter, and then that was it. And like, even like we joked down in South Florida, like, I survived like the week of winter 2020. Like, usually every year there's that joke that goes around, like, I survived like winter, and like, it's usually the dates between a week, and then that's, yep, it. But like here, this has been going on for a month now. I just kind of want it to end. And I know it's not. And we're still only in the beginning of January. And it's like, my girl loves it because she loves the cold. And she's originally from Connecticut. But my Florida ass is not used to it yet. I'm still adjusting.
Yep.
So that's what I figured out. I'll get there. But like, it's just a slow adjustment.
Yep. That's right.
All right, Ben. So now is the part of the show where we usually like to ask our guests, and you being that guest today, how you met your wife or significant other. I know you're married and you have a wife. You mentioned that. Mm-hmm. So how did you meet your wife?
Yeah. So I've been married for, 15 years, basically. We knew each other for a few years before that. And during that time, when we first met, I had the rare opportunity to play in a band, did some traveling, you know, cool, was able to kind of like, you know, visit some cool places of the country. And we played in her town. And after we got done playing, we were just kind of standing around, meeting people, talking, everything. Me and my drummer we're standing kind of like, you know, in a circle of people, just talking, goofing off, telling jokes, telling stories, talking music, whatever. And my now wife was kind of standing behind me in a different circle of people, talking about something entirely different. And I don't know what she was doing. She hadn't caught my eye at that time, but whatever we were talking about in our circle was probably far stupider than any other circle in the room was talking about. Cause we ended up talking about like farts and, you know, just stupid, whatever. And my drummer, a guy named John, he said something to one of the girls in this circle that we're talking. He's like, girls don't fart. And my now wife from behind us, she chimes in and she goes, oh, I do. Oh, I fart all the time. Oh, well, and she just starts getting into it. And I'm like, all right. And that wasn't like, you know, like the hard eyes moment or anything like that. Uh-huh. But as the story goes, we ended up kind of nicknaming her the amazing farting girl. And that was just kind of a joke at the time. It was just kind of a passing, you know,
I'm sure glancing conversation kind of thing.
What's that?
I'm sure she loves that nickname now.
Yeah. Well, she embraces it. If you're listening and you know my wife, feel free to use that. Yeah, so I don't know. We met back in the days of AOL Instant Messenger, which was the original online dating.
Yes.
And so we actually just, you know, happened to strike up a conversation, had really, really similar personalities. We really got along really well right off the bat, exchanged usernames and all this kind of stuff. And I added her and we chatted a few times and it was nothing romantic about it. In fact, she used to give me tips in how to like woo the girl that I was interested in at the time. And I was trying to give her tips how to woo the guy that she was into at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was as I was moving to North Carolina, I happened to drive past a sign, you know, for the town she lived in. And I'd messaged her back. I was like, hey, guess where I drove, you know, the last trip between Georgia and North Carolina. And she goes, oh, cool. That's, you know, it's kind of a halfway spot. If you'd like, you know, once you come and just kind of sleep on the couch, you know, you can kind of make it a halfway point and not have to drive that whole thing. Cause I was driving in the middle of the night. I was working the daytime. I used to work at a music store.
Right.
And then I would drive and basically move my stuff up weekend by weekend for the span of a month and a half or so. And so for some reason, her mom was like, yeah, that's totally cool. Like, let a stranger come into the house and sleep on our couch. And yeah, no worries. And they did. And so that sort of turned into she and I getting to know each other a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And things sort of, you know, escalated, you know, between us romantically and relationally. And as the story goes, now we have two kids and a house and a dog. And we're the nuclear family, all because she enjoyed talking with us about farting.
Like, she invited you to be on the couch and you never left.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, that's a great story, though. I really, really enjoy that. And like hell, man, I wish you'd brought up the music thing earlier. That's a whole other podcast we could have gone into.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I actually don't play too much anymore except for just kind of, you know, picking the guitar around here at the house. You know, I mean, if you look, like, we're on a call together, but like mm-hmm. there, where is it? There.
Yeah, I see the case.
I leaned up against the wall. Now, it's in a case, but I should do it. It's justice and kind of put it on the wall or put it on a stand or something. But we just kind of keep it around because I'll pick around with the kids and we'll just kind of play, you know, a little bit here and there.
But another form of creativity. That's always welcome.
That's right. Yeah, I love it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for sharing that story with us. And it's, you know, a very heartwarming.
You're welcome. My wife may not thank me for sharing it. I'm just not going to tell her that I'll let her listen to the podcast. And if she makes it to the end, she'll know.
Oh, I'm sure she will. But thanks for sharing again. I appreciate that. So now's the time for us to start wrapping up. As always, I want to thank our guest, Ben, for being on from Make for Life Workshop. Ben, thanks again. I know we've talked several times before, but I appreciate you coming on to the podcast and dealing with me and talking with me again.
No, man, I love it. I'm thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate, you know, giving me the chance to kind of talk with you and share with you the journey.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it was fascinating learning the story, and it's a good story, and I hope that your journey continues as well.
You as well, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. And as always, guys, we appreciate you for listening. If you want to help us out by sharing the podcast, go and check Ben out over at Make for Life Workshop on his Etsy and then on Instagram. And that kind of segues, and I should just let you say, like, where can people find you at, Ben?
Yeah, they. You can find me on Venmo at Ben Neiman. No, I'm sorry.
Good lead.
No, I mean Instagram. Make for Life Workshop. It's all one word. The same thing on YouTube. I actually do have two YouTube videos uploaded. All honesty, they were really made for Instagram, and then I just pushed them to YouTube. At the behest of the maker group on Zoom.
Of us. Yeah, yes. We heckled you until you said, okay, yep. Fine, I'll do it. So you'll shut up.
Yep. Yep. I'm on Facebook, pretty much everywhere. It's Make for Life Workshop. Instagram is kind of my primary, means of communication at the moment, but, I'm looking to try to expand that. You know, I'm looking at trying to figure out how to, get myself out there in more ways. You will never find me on TikTok ever. Otherwise, yeah, I'm out there. Make for Life Workshop.
Excellent. And Steven's not here. He wasn't, unfortunately, able to join us, but he's still here with us in spirit. So you can find him at Wolf Woodworking Creations on YouTube and Instagram. Also, you can check me out, Native Son Wood Art, on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and my Patreon account as well. So I definitely appreciate you if you go check any of those out and help support us. Speaking of supporting us, we really appreciate a review of the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you're listening to the podcast at. Really helps us out. Or even just sharing the podcast to your friends, family, whoever you might think might be interested. Truly helps us out, and we truly appreciate the support as well. And any feedback that we get to help make the podcast better is always welcome. And speaking of feedback, we did get a review from Emmett at Dead Rise Woodcraft. It says, I just started listening to the podcast today, and it's great. Kind of fades away, and it's great. I've been listening to the podcast today. Great work, he says. And thank you, Emmett, for that, as we really, truly appreciate you listening. I'm glad that you're enjoying the podcast, and anything that you think that we can do better, please feel free to, reach out to us. And may or may not be hearing from Emmett again. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge on that one. So, Ben, thanks again for being on. Really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. Love learning more about you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, bro. Appreciate you guys having me on. Sorry, had to miss you, Steve. Catch you on the next one.
Oh, yeah. He'll definitely be in the next one because we can't do the show without him. It's not the same. Yeah. That's right. Me by myself is just not enough. So, all right. To take us out here at Makers Figuring It Out is our mission to educate, motivate, and inspire. And we've done that for you today. So this is Jacob and my co-host Steve in spirit reminding you to keep learning, keep being motivated, keep getting inspired, and keep figuring it out. We'll see you guys next time.